Sometimes that's right. So if you're visiting with us, we basically go down the outline. We'll read a little bit. We'll answer some questions. Anytime you have a comment, just raise your hand or speak up, and we'll try to address your question or comment. Ecclesiastes is a book of the Bible that's intended to help us understand how to live wisely in the world. We have the core of what Solomon is going to tell us in this passage in verse 1 when he says, "Guard your steps when you go to the house of God." As we enter his presence, we should do so with respect and reverence, watching what we say and what we do, and recognizing that he alone is the judge. We sometimes miss the reverence and awe, as mentioned in Hebrews 12:28, a healthy fear that we are to have as we come before God. We shouldn't approach our earthly fathers flippantly, arrogantly, or rudely, but instead it should be with respect and honor, along with a calm assurance of their love for us. Solomon says we should approach God, our Heavenly Father, in the same way. Any questions or comments as we get started? So, just to kind of lay out some groundwork before we actually get into the text, what does the word casual mean? When we talk about casual, what are we referring to?
Comfortably informal.
Informal, okay. Anybody else have a definition or?
Judy says laid back.
Now, Judy, you can speak up. You don't have to rely on Don.
She's too laid back.
Yeah, she's laid back.
I think just to be yourself.
Just be yourself? Some people are pretty uptight. Some people are not casual. They're pretty tight. So, word casual means relaxed, laid back, without sufficient care or preparation, happening by chance, informal. So what is the exact opposite of casual?
Uptight.
Formal. Deliberate, focused, acting only with thought and premeditation. So what does it mean to come before God with reverence and awe? That's in Hebrews 12:28-29 where we actually see that. What does reverence and awe mean?
Respect.
What? Healthy respect. Anybody else? What does the word reverence mean?
To revere.
I'm sorry?
To revere.
To revere?
I think it's sort of has an aspect of fear in it.
Does it?
I think
it's
like godly.
You've been reading ahead, haven't you?
No.
The word reverence means honor or respect felt or shown. So what would the word awe mean? A-W-E.
Amazed.
Amazed. Anybody else?
So, I was reading. The word awesome became very common.
Yeah.
But if you're reading an older book, or a classic, or I don't know. Anyway, and I think in the Bible and the Old Testament, they felt awe. That is definitely fear.
Yeah.
And it's way beyond just being like, oh, that's great. It's like much more of a total being astounded or amazed.
Okay. Amazed or astounded.
But there's definitely.
Okay. Anybody else? Where it all means.
The second part of that sentence is in verse 29.
Yeah.
It says, "For our God is a consuming fire."
Correct.
And that doesn't really bring comfort.
If you're on the wrong side of that.
Yeah, it goes with the fear, like Marie's talking about, which we're going to talk about in just a minute. The word awe, being in awe of God, implies that we have a respect toward Him, as well as an attitude of worship and admiration. And we get an example of that in Psalm 95:6. "Oh, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker." So God in his greatness is worthy of all our devotion and praise. He is worthy of our whole hearts. So, what are some examples of approaching God casually instead of approaching him with reverence and awe? What are some examples of approaching God casually? Could it be sleeping during church? Huh? Could be.
Ignoring what he says, during his worship.
Yeah. Or sitting in during worship texting your best buddy, your best friend, or something.
I think approaching God is a time of prayer.
Okay. Well, how about when you're approaching God in prayer and you address the prayer as daddy or dad? Anyone ever heard that done before?
Yeah.
Is that a form of being casual or is that showing respect?
Disrespect.
Huh?
I would think disrespect.
Disrespect?
I call my dad daddy and I didn't feel disrespectful.
Okay.
It's a word now that we use it reflecting more intimacy.
It's changed since first century days. I agree with that. Yeah.
I don't think the King James would have used the word daddy.
No.
Is that Abba?
Abba Father is a address. Yeah. I've given you a quote from David Platt. So let me encourage you to guard against in your heart and your mind a casual approach to God that forgets his holiness and his greatness. So anytime we forget God's holiness and greatness, we're being too casual.
So that word forgets is out of that quote.
Correct.
You left the word forget off of the sheet.
Yeah, it's more, to me, it's more what you, how you feel in your mind.
That has a lot to do with it. Yeah.
It has to do with maybe what you say or how you say it. I mean, you wouldn't want to cuss while you're praying.
Yeah.
To me, that would be irreverent.
Yeah. And when you're in your closet and you're talking to God, with that attitude, you could call him daddy, I guess, if you meant it in a respectful way. So, I've heard public prayers addressed that way though.
I think God hears regardless, and sometimes we're angry with God.
Yeah.
And we give God our thoughts.
Yeah.
I think God is big enough; he can handle that.
Yeah. Yep.
We're studying in ladies' class in a couple of weeks the difference in complaining and pleading with God. So
yeah.
I do want us to be careful about complaining against God versus pleading with God.
Yeah, yeah. We can plead, but we shouldn't complain. Did I just steal your study for next week?
Nope.
Okay.
You say we shouldn't complain, Jeff?
The complaints that God heard in Numbers were met with deadly force. So what do you think?
I think sometimes we have complaints.
I think we go to God with pleas for change, but we still go to God with the understanding that he still is God. He will hear us. We are asking for this, but we're still going to obey him if he doesn't do what we say.
So you don't think any of the songs that David wrote were complaining at all?
They were pleas.
I don't know. I think there's some complaints in there. We might, to be honest. But
are you recording your classes? Your ladies' classes? I was going to say, give Gary a copy of it. Let him hear it. Give him what?
Give him the book.
Oh. Who would like to read verses 1? Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Oh, Marie, I'm sorry.
So much it's what our heart is behind it.
Yeah.
If you're talking about casual, it's like, okay, when I'm driving the car, if I'm praying while I'm driving and also being, is that too casual? I mean, it's the heart.
And that,
I think much worse is the people who don't pray to him, the people who don't. It's what am I recognizing who he is?
Yeah.
No matter how I'm dressed or how I'm sitting or kneeling or not,
I think that goes with what Wayne was saying. It's your attitude, Kevin.
So So you asked earlier about maybe an example.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a perfect example, but I thought about when the tax collector was in prayer to God, and then the Pharisee did.
Yeah.
And so one was heard, and one was not well approved. I thought maybe the fact because the tax collector or the Pharisee did not have a good self-awareness of who he was.
Yeah.
God. And that can destroy a reverence or even an awe.
Yeah.
Where the other was, the collector was like, I can't believe I'm even talking to God. He was really in awe.
Yeah.
And humble.
Yeah. Humble is a good word. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what came to my mind.
Yeah. No, that was a good. Jared?
I'm just going to comment. You do your prayers faithfully, whether you're driving down the road on your cell phone.
Yeah.
You're communicating with God.
Yeah, right.
But people will assume, well, you don't stand there and pray like in public all the time.
Or kneel on, get down on your knees like we used to do back in the day. So.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
I'm surprised this hadn't been brought up yet, but those of us who've been here for 50 years or more, our culture has changed very much from a formal culture to and I'm speaking about the way we dress.
Yeah.
50 years ago, a Bible class teacher or a preacher would not show up without a suit and tie.
And most of the men, male members would be in coat and ties too.
So does that imply that by becoming more casual as our culture has, that perhaps we don't take our formal gatherings in a more formal manner? I'm just asking.
I have a thought on that. In Jesus' time, in the temple, a lot of people went to temple without wearing a suit simply because they only had one outfit. And times changed over the millennia, and now it's pretty common for people to have one suit, but it's also getting more common for people not to have a suit anymore. Yeah, there's more and more we're seeing that. And I think...
Or at least one that fits.
I think the wearing of the shirt and tie... Well, shirt and ties didn't even exist, 300 years ago or whatever it was, but that is purely cultural. And I think that's something that Jesus adjusts to.
Well, that's from a guy that wears a white shirt and a bow
tie. And a bow tie. I'm with you. I'm on the same line. I was raised to wear my best on Sunday, whatever my best was. So, Fawn?
I think they raise a good point. And it's a heart issue. If you're doing a suit and tie because you want to give God your best and because you want to show Him respect, God sees that.
Yeah.
Amen. But if you're doing that to puff yourself up and show people, hey, look at me, I have
arrived.
Yeah. God sees that too.
Yeah.
And, I don't think He would want people to be chased off out of church because they don't have a suit and tie. I think that would be bad thing.
Yeah.
Very much so.
I think it behooves us not to judge people who want to come in a suit and tie, and also not to judge people who
are in a suit and tie.
Or don't.
Yeah. A lot of times our visitors, we'll have visitors that come in with suit and ties.
And I know there's
nothing wrong with that.
Out there that would look down on people if they didn't show up in a suit and tie.
Yeah.
I would hope that wouldn't be the case, but...
I can give you examples, but we won't go there.
It's just like
I'm serious.
It's a heart issue. God sees the heart. He knows why we're here and what we're doing.
Yeah. Bernard?
Well, in fact, Cindy and I have had the same conversation this morning. And I don't know if the gentleman is in here, but he came in with shorts. And we were talking about that because, and what Cindy said, I don't think he would wear shorts where... He attended from Tennessee. He was from Tennessee. And I asked him, I said, you've been here before? And he said, yes.
Yeah.
And Cindy kind of said, well, he knows how we dress.
he knows us.
All are welcome.
Roger?
I was just going to say, like a lot of people here at my age grew up in maybe rural congregations. I grew up in North Georgia where... Men on Sunday, a lot of whom were farmers, They come to church in
their overalls, yeah,
and a white shirt,
yeah,
and drove their Ford tractor.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
You know? So
yeah,
it's. I don't think maybe, obviously they, I think they were attempting to wear their best. You know, ties and suits were not as available to
yeah.
them. So I think somewhere in the last, I don't know, 50 years, 75 years, it's changed, because I don't know that 75 years or 100 years ago people wore suit and tie.
Yeah.
So it's just a cultural, like David mentioned, a cultural shift.
But there was a time, and I'm not old enough to remember this. Some of y'all maybe, but there was a time when the men would wear a tie to school, wouldn't they? High school, maybe college?
My dad did.
Okay. And the women all wore skirts. They couldn't wear pants and all that sort of thing. I know first time I visited one of our brotherhood schools, my wife was, we were together. We were visiting some of our old classmates. And it was time for lunch or for dinner, supper. And they wouldn't let us into the cafeteria because she had on pants. So she had to borrow a skirt from one of her friends just to go eat. It was that tight back then. It may not be now, but anyway.
Well, there was a time, too, when guys used to wear suits and gals used to wear hose and
yeah.
skirts to football games.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Jesus referred to John the Baptist as there's no one greater than
yeah.
him. And he didn't dress up.
No, he didn't.
So then, can the preacher wear shorts then?
No. No.
I thought it'd be okay, except...
You read the small print. Read the small print. Read the footnote.
You know, I do when we do our beach worship every year. I'm in my sandals and shorts.
Cindy, and then we got to move on.
Well, we're not allowed to wear shorts, period. Intercepting. So
oh, yeah.
Very,
yeah.
active in sports.
Yeah.
So we play basketball, all of us.
Yeah.
We
yeah. Yeah.
I grew up, you could look to the pastor, minister, whatever, and the Word of God, because they're known about the Word of God. So therefore, if they have to dress properly, whatever, you're more likely to listen. Now, see, that's kind of when they go around and politicians and stuff.
Yeah.
Dress up and smile, but they're lying to you. So you have to.
Some preachers, I think you need to wear a robe like some preachers do.
Didn't Paul condemn the favoritism of the church?
Yes.
When
yes.
they brought somebody in with dressed nicely
yes.
fine clothes and put him in a special seat.
And you put the rich person up yes. front.
And
yeah.
the other person was put to sit down here at my feet.
Yeah.
So I think that right then we understand then that the clothes don't make the man.
Correct. Our woman.
The heart does.
All right. Does anyone have a Bible translation? I talked about this last week. That actually chapter 4 has a verse 17. Last week, nobody had one of those. If you have the complete Jewish Bible, the Doa Reims, an 1899 American Edition Bible, the 1599 Geneva Bible, the New American Bible Revised Edition, the New Catholic Bible, or the Tree of Life Version Bible, you will have a chapter 4, verse 17. But everywhere else, you'll have a 5 beginning in verse 1. And what happens with these other Bibles, they just change the numbers so that the numbers work out at the end of chapter 5, but they're different. So, since no one has one of those, who would like to read verses 1 through 7? You want me to read it? Kevin? 1 through 7.
Guard your steps when you go to the house of God. Go near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools who do not know what they do wrong. Do not be quick with your mouth. Do not be hasty in your heart to utter anything before God. God is in heaven and you are on earth, so let your words be few. A dream comes when there are many cares, and many words mark the speech of a fool. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to fulfill it. He has no pleasure in fools. fulfill your vow. It is better not to make a vow than to make one and not fulfill it. Do not let your mouth lead you into sin. And do not protest to the temple messenger, "My vow was a mistake." Why should God be angry at what you say and destroy the work of your hands? Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Therefore, fear God.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. So how are we to conduct ourselves when we go to the house of God? Verse 1. What's the first thing we should do, though? What's the very first three words it says?
Guard your steps.
Guard your steps. And then do what, Deborah?
Well, carefully, Sal.
All right, yeah. Yeah, guard your steps.
It says, listen.
Be careful. And with your ears, what?
It's open.
Open. And your mouth, what?
Shut.
So where does the phrase, better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt? Where does that come from?
Abraham Lincoln.
That one comes from Abraham Lincoln. Mark Twain said, it is better to keep your mouth closed and let people think you're a fool than to open it and remove all doubt. But where did they get the thought? Proverbs 17:28. Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. So it's all based on Proverbs 17:28. Is it okay to express your love to God and that you want to do great things for Him? What?
Yes,
absolutely. But what's the warning? There's a warning there, verse 2.
Do not make a casual vow.
Do not make rash promises. So it's okay to do it, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. So why should people let their words be few?
You can remember what you said that way.
Yeah, it's Abraham Lincoln. What said the thing about something to the effect of the liar what he says.
Yeah, I don't know if he. I didn't know Abraham Lincoln said it, but I've heard it said that.
Yeah.
So what do you think is meant by the admonition to be cautious in your speech when coming before the Lord in prayer?
I think it's coming with a learning attitude.
Okay.
And a respect. But
some of that reverence and awe comes into play too, doesn't it?
But coming to learn, not, you know, when we're talking, we're not.
If you're talking, you can't hear. Unless you're a male, we can watch TV and talk to our wives, right, Dave?
I don't.
Dave. You don't? So, is the writer here saying that we are to limit our prayers to God? If we're supposed to limit our speech to Him, is that saying limit your prayers to Him? So what's he saying? What's the bottom line here?
Let's be cautious.
Be cautious. What we say.
Be serious.
Be serious. Yeah.
Be still and know that I'm not a God.
Exactly. Yeah.
Amen.
Yes, sir.
In Hebrews, it also says that we should approach the throne of grace with confidence.
Correct.
So, and I like how you wrote in your notes, we should approach with respect and honor along with a calm assurance. God's love.
Yeah.
So there's respect and there's also confidence.
Yeah.
And that's neat. That's
yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. And it's hard to draw that line sometimes, but they both should be there.
Yeah. We have an example of a vow that was given not necessarily in haste, but without proper forethought.
Where's that?
In Judges.
Okay.
Where the man who was victorious in battle said, "I will give the first thing that comes from my house that
yeah.
brings me to the Lord."
Yeah.
And his first thing was his only child, his only daughter.
Yep. So number 8, comes from verse 3. What causes dreams? What? I guess because you be while you're daydreaming too. I don't know. According to verse 3, where do dreams come from? What's the cause of it?
When you're really hungry, you dream of feast.
Too much activity? That's New Living Translation says that.
Too much activity?
Mm-hmm. That's what New Living says, too much activity. Does anyone have a contemporary English? And this is kind of what goes to what Deborah's talking about. If you keep thinking about something, you would dream about it. That's contemporary English. Does anyone have an international standard? International standard, instead of dreams, it calls it nightmares. And it says it comes from too many worries. Roger, you got your international children?
I do.
You got it open?
Will.
look at verse 3. Roger's going to look at International Children's Bible. What did verse 3 say?
I'm going to look it up.
Okay.
I've got it.
You got it? Okay. Janice?
The saying is true. Bad dreams come from too much worrying.
Okay.
So too many words come from foolish people.
Okay. So International Children says bad dreams come from too much worrying. So, anybody dream anything last night?
Yes, I did.
You want to talk about it?
I did, but I'm not going to worry about it.
Mike Mack.
You what?
Mike Mack.
Mike Mack, okay.
I dreamed about him last night.
Oh, really?
When I woke up this morning, he was on my mind.
If you don't know Mike, he's tall like Bernard is. So
I mentioned his name this morning to someone too.
It's amazing. I mean, it was.
How's he doing?
As a matter of fact, Gear was in the dream.
Yesterday on Facebook, he did a friend request, showing possible friends, and showed up Mike Mack. Actually.
His birthday
oh, really?
Just passed. Yeah, it did.
Mike's birthday just passed. He says he's not on Facebook a lot. So.
His wife's birthday just passed.
Sandy, were you going to say something, David?
No, I just about a dream. I said Mike's okay. Talking about Mike this morning.
And one of the things, I'm just, matter of fact, to give you a little background, he and I had lunch one day, and matter of fact, I'm asking you guys just to pray for him that, you know, he's going through a situation.
Yeah.
Just pray for him that,
I don't know. It could be one and the same.
I think in Acts it says old men would dream dreams and young men would see visions. So maybe your age.
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that one.
Old men sleep all the time, so whatever they see is called a dream.
I will check it out, though. Try to come up with an answer. So, going back, let's see, number 9. What is characteristics of a fool? Janice read the end of verse 3 a while ago. Remember, anybody remember what she said?
Many words.
Many words. Read somewhere, it said blabbermouth. Contemporary English says you talk too much. So, does anybody have something different? So God doesn't force us to make promises to Him, but if we do, does He expect us to keep them?
Yes.
And how are we supposed to pay them? If we make a promise, what are we supposed to do? Do what, Deborah?
Don't delay it.
Don't delay it. Yeah, without delay. It's dangerous to vow to give a certain amount to God and then renege. So what two principles concerning vows are given by the preacher in verses 4 and 5? We just touched on verse 4, but what does verse 5 say about vows?
Don't be hasty to make them.
Don't be hasty?
It's better not to even ever make a vow than it is to make one and then
yeah, that's more what verse 5 says. Yeah. Well, you're saying don't be hasty and do it and saying.
Original Bible that I memorized.
Okay.
That was the wording, but
oh, okay.
But to me,
do this, and I promise I'll never again, and, you know, and all of that.
Then we forget.
It's really the whole attitude of how we're coming to God.
Mm-hmm.
Why we're coming and what is our heart towards Him.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, all of these are examples of not having that reverence at all.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're working on here. So, yeah, it's better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Make promises we can't keep or don't keep. Is it a sin to break promises to God? We just answered that one. So when we're talking about vows, what type of vow is Solomon referring to? When he says don't make a vow, when he says when you make a vow, pay it quickly. What is he referring to here? Yes. He was talking, the teacher seems to be referring to the vow that people made to pay a certain sum to the temple treasury. When they failed to come through, someone would come and visit them to remind them of their vow. So like a hitman, I guess.
A vow for that.
So if you didn't follow through with your promise, they came and got you. So in the presence of whom, let me back up, in the presence of whom are we not to admit that we said it was a mistake? And I use the word whom because different translations say different things.
Yeah, at least it's temple messenger.
All right. Also, New Living also says temple messenger. Anybody else have something different?
Priest at the temple.
Priest at the temple. That's from the Children's Bible. Contemporary English. Anybody have contemporary English? It says worship leader. Anybody have King James? King James says priest. So do we know who we're talking about? According to Albert Barnes' commentary, he used an example from Exodus 23:21 that's a spiritual being representing the presence of God. He also says it could be from 2 Samuel 24:17, one that inflicted judgment upon David. And then he uses Malachi 2:7, just calling him a priest. So I'm not exactly sure I have the answer for this, to be honest with you, based on the different translations. So, anybody have a thought or something different? Was that God talking?
I have a question.
Certainly.
Do you think this whole part about vows is mainly referring to that, to the vows to give?
The vows to the
it's mainly all about
to the temple?
Or to God and anyone?
I think it's talking about vows in general.
Okay.
Even though Solomon may be directly talking about the vows to the temple, I think the overall lesson is to us in general also. That's from Henley 4:12. So.
First.
Do what?
First Henley.
First Henley, yeah. Anybody else have a thought on it? So what does God say about folks who talk a lot about their dreams but don't do them? Verse 7. I'm hearing people. Do what, Cindy? Meaningless. Okay. All in vanity, as we've talked about before. What else does it mean? Or does he say? What's the last three or four words? Depends on your translation. Fear God. That's pretty deep, isn't it? Verse 7, for in many dreams and in many words there is emptiness, so rather fear God or revere God. So what does it mean to fear God?
Reverential awe and respect.
Are we supposed to cringe though when we think about it?
I don't think so.
All right. Just have respect. Is that what you're saying?
Paul Tarrant's always said, reverential awe and respect.
Reverential.
Reverential awe and respect. I always like that.
Okay.
I don't think it's something we just stand ashamed before God.
Yeah.
Even though there were instances in the Bible.
There are times we may need to.
But I think in this instance, it's talking about reverential awe.
Okay.
The word fear has changed definition in the past 120 years.
Well, you notice I put it in quotations, so.
It's pretty recent.
Yeah. Fear, is fear and being scared the same thing? You ready for this?
Being scared can be included in fear, but fear does not necessarily mean being scared.
You ready for my answer?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
What's another word for perhaps?
Or another word for perhaps? Maybe. Now, what I have for 16, have a sense of awe and submission. It's recognizing that God is God and that we're to enter His presence with reverence and awe. So we have a respect for Him, but don't take it very lightly. There are times you need to take it heavily, but not always. Anybody have any questions, comments? Yes, ma'am.
When I have dreams, I think, oh, this is a great dream. I'm going to do this tomorrow. As soon as I wake up, I can't even.
You forget it.
So how did those people back in the Old Testament remember their dreams so vividly?
I don't think they're talking about sleeping dreams. I think they're talking about
daytime
fantasy
dreams.
Okay.
Yeah. If you say, I'm going to go out and, what's a good example?
Say, buy Ferrari.
Well, let's get it down to spirit. Let's get it to something spiritual. I'm going to go out here and knock on 100 doors and invite 100 people to church next week. Well, you don't do that. You don't even knock on the first one. What have you done?
Yep.
You've made a promise that you haven't fulfilled, right?
For in the multitude of dreams, there are vanities.
There are what?
Vanities.
Yes, there are. Yes.
We can have people standing out at the front sign. There are 50 people that go by our sign a day.
Yeah.
And you can stop and have a conversation with those people. You don't have to knock on the door.
Well, no. I'm just using that as an example.
Actually,
I'm not talking about
what's
the.
Dreaming of doing. No. Let me say something. This is not dreaming. This is what Richard and Luke are doing in the mornings out here by the sign,
awesome.
Getting guard ready. People are stopping talking to
awesome.
To them. This is something that is happening, and we're trying to get other people out there to be part of that. Or Lucas, I cannot take credit for that.
It's
not a
week.
Any other comments or questions about our text before we close out? Having observed much folly during his search for the purpose of life, the preacher's assuming a warning and urges caution when one goes to the house of God. We are to do so with reverence and awe as we draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools. Therefore, be careful what you say. When you do make a vow or promise, don't delay paying it. It is better not to vow than to vow and not keep it. Do not let your mouth get you into trouble, thinking you can simply excuse your way out of promises you have made. The basic theme of verses 1 through 7 of chapter 5 is that the righteous anger of God is to be feared.
Be afraid, be very afraid.
Be afraid, very afraid. Next week we're going to finish out chapter 5, go into chapter 6. We're going to look at 22 verses. Right now I have 26 questions. So I've got to weed that down some. But I asked you, and I don't ask you to do this often, please read these verses before you get here because we may not have time to read them in class. Does everybody understand that? That's my only request. Yes, sir, Jared.
I think you have an important point to make.
Okay.
Talking about old men dreaming dreams and young men dreaming.
Someone said that. Yeah, I've made myself the note to try to distinguish the difference between visions and dreams. So I'll try to have that next week if I can find anything on that. So. Anybody else have any final closing comments? All right. There's going to be another hot week, so stay cool. Keep hydrated. Thank you for your comments, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, Les.
Thank you.